Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN Radio. I'm your host, Michael Heidemann. There's a lot of things going on in the music industry right now. And to speak with me a little bit about streaming, and do we stop discovering music around age 30, which is very heartbreaking, I bring on the one and only journalism megaforce, our newsman from WGN Radio, Doma T. Pongo. What's going on, man?
Journalism megaforce. Yes. I've got a new Twitter bio. What's going on, Mike?
Not too much. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for staying up late with me. This is great. When I was looking at this article, I thought, I know the guy to call about this, and that's you, because you're all over the city. You have so much stuff going on, and you have your foot in the music industry, so I thought that this would be a good thing that we could tackle together.
Yeah, I would love to. I'm a music head, mm-hmm. written music for several years. I used to host an open mic called the Artist Lounge throughout the city, have created avenues for a lot of up-and-coming artists. And when I saw this article, I'm like, yeah, we got to talk about this one.
Yes. So do we stop listening to music and discovering music around age 30? I'm a little bit above that age. Doma T, you're a little bit below that age. So I thought this is a good... And Curtis, my friend, you're a little... Even more.
I'm a lot younger than 30.
He's needs to put that out there. Yes.
So, doesn't even have a mustache. Look at this guy.
I can't grow a mustache or a beard, for that matter.
One day, Curtis, one day. Don't you worry. Well, a new survey from Deezer, which is a music streaming service, suggests that we stop listening to new music at age 30. This might be because of a busy life or what you have going on. For example, the ages between 12 and 22, our brains actually go through a lot of changes where we're more receptive to songs we hear. They kind of soak into us. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, our brains like this nostalgic music. And, you know, there's no shame in indulging in that, I feel like. And you and I actually were talking off mic, Doma T, about how we kind of are stuck in this time warp ourselves.
Absolutely.
Were we listening to this music? We have it now on our iTunes, and we can't escape from it. What do you think this is?
You know, there's a nostalgia. We're stuck in whatever it is that those seminal moments in our lives when we were 12 to 22 years old, those adolescent moments, you can tie every big memory in your life to some song, mm-hmm. right? That first breakup, there was a song you played after that first breakup. There was that girl you liked that finally gave you a dance, the school dance, and you remember the song that was playing. All of those, some of those moments you can't really recreate. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but sonically, music changes so much that whatever we loved about the certain sound, like, you know, people who love light rock aren't in love with how music sounds right now. People who love classic hip hop, like myself, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had to grow on Future and 21 Savage and all these new rappers with weird names and face tattoos. Like, I gotta get into it. I sound like an old man now, but it's interesting. So I think it's the nostalgia piece, but it's also how music evolves. Sometimes it kind of leaves some of us behind in a way.
Yeah, I feel you on that, because you really hit the note on the head, no pun intended, about listening to those songs that you were listening to when you were a teenager, making out with a girl in your car, or sitting there waiting for her to answer the phone or something. And for me, it was that early 2000 punk pop. We're talking Dashboard Confessional.
There you go.
Blink-182, Muse. And now listening to bands, like you said, like 21 Pilots and Drake and Future, it's hard to dive into that new music without anything tied to it, because now, instead of listening to it on the radio, I'm for it, or picking up the CD, or maybe, you know, taking a blank CD and sharing it with your friend and drawing like a nice like artistic design on it.
Right.
There's not that same sense, because we're purely a digital age.
Yes.
Which we're kind of, do you feel like that's taking away from that that great comforting feel we had when we popped in a CD?
I think it's the digital age. It changes that excitement that you used to have when you had a CD. I'm really frustrated with streaming right now, because I wish that these songs and albums came with PDF files, mm-hmm. that at least had album art. We don't have album art anymore. There's nothing tying you to the project. Music feels so disposable. It's real fly by night. Like, it's, so many songs are released. You feel like you can't keep up. There's a new hit on the radio and you have no idea what it is. You're like, listen, I'm just going to go in my corner, listen to what I'm used to. So the digital age moves music far too quickly for many of us, especially when you get into your life, when you start to, you know, get jobs and have kids and start to get into this adulting phase. Mm-hmm. You really don't have time to waste on music that you don't enjoy, because you can't get that time back. It's the reason I don't go to the movies as much either, because I don't want to waste 2 hours. Yeah. If I don't like what I'm seeing. And it's different with music because we live with it in our heads all day through these headphones and AirPods. It's this whole thing.
That's so interesting, because it's true. You don't want to, for the time that you spend picking out the CD and then looking through it. I remember going through to vinyl stores and rifling through the cover art. And usually I pick an album by how cool the cover was.
Right.
At
right.
the times. I mean, think about this. The Beatles, when they were in the greatest band of all time in the 60s, they came out with the White Album in a nearly flipped everyone's lids. Like, right. They couldn't even take that. There was no cover art for this. Now, if somebody did that, they'd be like, who?
Right.
What? They had a cover art? I didn't even notice this.
They don't even pay. It's to the point, cover art now doesn't even have the name of the project on it.
Mm-hmm.
Jay-Z and Beyonce just dropped Everything Is Love. Beautiful picture. They have this picture of two dancers. She's braiding his hair in front of the Mona Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And they rented out the whole museum where the Mona Lisa is. And there's no title. There's nothing to obstruct the art. So it does give you an opportunity to really appreciate the cover art and the art itself, but it also shows how disconnected that art kind of is from the listening experience because of the way we interact with it via the cell phone app.
Yes.
And yeah. Then you think about what it means, the level of investment you get with music when you touch it. When you got that album and you flipped through that CD book, or when you got that vinyl, that record, you dusted it off and you started looking through the track list. When you put it in, you lived and sat with the music a little longer because, one, you had to pay for it and leave with it and go visit with it and all of that. But now, if you're just going through Tidal or Apple Music and flipping through songs, you don't have that same connection to it. So you're more likely to be, you know, attached to music you grew up on.
Yeah. You know what? I had no idea that Beyonce and Jay-Z rented out and took that photo in front of Mona Lisa.
Oh my God. The photo shoot. And you only see the pictures on random Instagram and social media accounts. I would have loved to see all of the pictures in a CD book.
Yes.
The old school way. I know. We sound like old guys. But it's true.
I know. It's like, bring back those CDs where we could look at the lyrics and everything and dive through that. Because it's really an artistic piece, like what I was talking about with Dave Plyer. The Rolling Stone used to be pieces of art. People would frame their albums. People would frame their magazines just to be closer. Do kids today, Curtis, maybe you can help this out with us. Do kids today even put up pictures of artists on their walls anymore? Is that a thing? Because I used to have, you know, Blink-182.
Help us old guys out. Yeah, Blink-182. Who was on your wall? That's what I want to know. Blink-182.
I had Blink-182. I had Alkaline Trio. I think I had a picture of, like, Austin Powers at one point in my life, too. Like, there's a lot of anything that I could find that I thought was cool and looked, like, artistic, I put on my wall. But now today, I guess I still do. I have a lot of vinyls that I hang up. I have the Beatles, Queen, Elton John. A lot of classic albums that I like to look at because it makes me, you know, makes me think about the good glory days.
So, yeah, I think more people around my age do collect posters, and I think it's more so what they can just pick up at like an FYE store or something like that. I don't think they actively go out and look for it. But I know, like, when I've gone to concerts, the few concerts I've been to, some of the merchandise that you can pick up there are from, like, the latest album cover or whatever that tour is going to be. And I know there was a few really cool posters that were on sale when the Foo Fighters were at Wrigley last mm-hmm. year that I really wanted to get, but they sold out like within the first 30 minutes of the gates opening there. So I don't know who's collecting them. I know there are some millennials that are taking some of those posters, but
Is it kind of like an ironic vintage type of thing? Like, you know, like, oh, I have a poster. Remember these? Or is it really like...
Now we sound like really, really old. Guys.
I know. I'm sounding really old. Is it, you know what I mean, though?
Yeah. I don't know if people still have posters, at least out of my friends. I don't know anybody who has posters of bands like in their rooms or anything like that. Now, like maybe 10 years ago, like when we were still like in high school or in middle school, I feel like, yeah, there was a lot of people that had, I know like back in the day, like at least around my age, like when I was like 14, 13 or so, the Jonas Brothers were super big when they were still together in a band. And I know a lot of girls at my school had posters of the Jonas Brothers and stuff like that up and on their walls. But I don't know if anybody collects album. I know vinyl is big in millennials, but I know they collect just the album covers and stuff like that. But I don't know if they really like hang them. I know they just kind of keep them on their shelves and just kind of pop one on if they want to listen to the song or anything like that.
Yeah, I feel you. Vinyl definitely made a comeback in the past 10 years. And I think that actually I know for a fact that vinyl actually surpassed CD sales at one point in the late 2000s. In fact, I want to hear from our listeners. Tell us your glory day music. What poster did you have on the wall? What vinyls are you still spinning? 312-981-7200. Domati, let's take a quick break and dive back into the streaming conversation and look a little bit about the results from this study itself here on WGN. We'll be back in 1 minute. No stranger singing in your name. Welcome back to WGN Radio. My name is Michael Heidemann. I'm here with Domati Pongo. We are talking music. And just so you know, it's a simple fact of life that older people reminisce about the glory days. You might believe you stay young and free-spirited forever, but one day you find yourself grumbling like me and Domati about not understanding the latest slang words or asking Curtis if he has posters on his wall. And
you guys still do posters. Having the posters.
From the 773, we're getting some texts in. They have a framed original Rolling Stones with Bob Marley and The Clash on their covers on their wall. Look at that.
Wow.
Okay, so there still is hope.
Wow. You know who's my band, man?
Yeah, who is yours?
The Roots.
Yes!
I love The Roots. You guys know them from Jimmy...
Fallon.
Yes. I always confuse the Jimmys, the late night Jimmys.
It's too many.
They're the backing band for Jimmy Fallon, but their first album, Do You Want More, is the album dropped in 1993 or 1994 that I still revisit. It was the first time I heard this fusion of jazz, lyricism, freestyle, and hip-hop, freestyle instrumentation, and beatboxing, and this really organic, socially conscious, really deep way. I loved it, and I still listen to it to this day. That's my band. That's mine right there.
I have a little bit of a history myself with
The Roots.
With The Roots, when I was going to DePaul University, it was the first time I really dove into music. Because if you think back, there's a time whether you had a brother, a sister, an older brother, or a family member who showed you music, you know, and you're like, wow, that was incredible. And my dad showed me the Beatles and Cat Stevens, and there was this one guy that I studied with in math class who put on Live at the T Connection by The Roots, and I heard the song The Ultimate, and I was like, this is it.
Yes.
This is one of the greatest bands of all time. So look at this. We're getting some calls here too, talking about music, what's going on, what kind of posters you have on your wall, and what were your glory days of music. Let's take a quick call from Jeff. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Hi. We're doing great.
I wanted to pass this on, and this is from the early 70s. One of my favorite posters was a, I'm like an old hippie here.
Bring it on,
Jeff. Band Uriah Heep.
Uriah Heep.
Yeah. And the name of the album was Demons and Wizards.
Oh, wow.
Count me in.
I got to see what this cover looks like. I'm Googling it right now. Uriah Heep. First of all, these guys look cool. I'm loving this.
Yeah.
What was the best track on this album? What was the record that really got you going?
Oh, good Lord. The whole thing was good. It was like, that poster itself, I remember that thing from being posted up on my bed, just sitting there about being half lit and sitting there staring at
But like it's bringing you back to those memories, yeah. though, right, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. Every now and then a bump on the head will work, you know. But, you know, that's kind of like Led Zeppelin. They had that one poster where the guy, he's holding a lantern, kind of an old guy with a long beard.
Yes.
Kind of holding the lantern out over the cliff. Sound familiar?
Yes, it does. And I mean, and that was the day, back in those days, it was part of the experience. The album cover was like a song in itself, its own story. I remember one of my favorite album covers of all time, Outkast, AT Aliens. Mm. And I thought of it just now because it actually, I wouldn't have known this if I hadn't talked to you, Jeff. It actually looks similar to Demons and Wizards. The color schemes, the cartoonish imagery, kind of the spacey imagery. But, you know, it brings you into what the music is about to feel like.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the band, I saw the band at the Hammond Civic Center. And, I mean, they were great.
Yeah, I love this because you're tying yourself into the music. It's so much more than just sounds that are going to your ears. It's you're feeling it. And by the way, if anyone has the time, check out Uriah Heep's Dragons and Wizards.
Or Demons and Wizards.
Demons and Wizards. I got dragons on the mind. It's this wizard who's climbing up this snow-peaked mountain, and he seems to be dancing, I'm guessing. It's unreal.
That's it.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm looking at.
Yep, that's it.
Jeff.
And that's like the album cover. If you take the album cover itself and you unfold it, it's the same as the poster.
Yes. Do you remember unfolding albums and seeing like that full-on poster that you could hang on your wall?
Oh, my God.
I remember it was
a whole experience.
I remember getting some of those in CDs, even still, too.
Yes.
Like if you would go and get some CDs, and depending upon if you got like the like Greatest Hits collection or something like that, or some of those songs where you would open up the thing, and inside the case would be like a little like special slot that you would pull out the poster part, and then you could open it up and expand it, and there was the album cover or the poster right there.
Right on. Hey, Jeff. Go ahead.
Lou Reed had a real good poster, too, which it was just of him, and it's like his whole face is just covered with cigarette smoke, just like a cloud.
Uh-huh.
It was just, you know, it was kind of a neat poster. But no, I thought I'd share that with you guys, and I'm just kicking back and listening to you, so like a regular night.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
Jeff, that is great. Thanks for sharing those memories. I'm a fan of Jeff.
I am too.
I think that was That was a good call. We got one from Brian here too. Let's get Brian on air. What's going on, man? Welcome to Sound Sessions here on WGN.
Oop. Good. Are we good?
Go for it, man. What's going on?
How you doing? At first, you know, I was listening to the show and talking about posters and everything, and then my wheel started turning. Mm-hmm. But I want to comment about the call-in before me about the Led Zeppelin Stairway to Heaven poster.
Yeah.
Okay, what my sister bought for me about 4 or 5 years ago, it's probably about 18 inches wide, maybe 2 feet tall. It's got the Zeppelin Sorcerer, it's on the hill, but it's made out of plastic resin poster. It's like 3D.
Oh.
And that's right. And that's right above my computer desk right now as I'm talking to you.
Oh, wow.
Unreal. I love that you can surround yourself with that kind of art. I mean, is there a better way that can just reach into your heart than looking at a music poster, thinking about those memories, and then just rocking out to it later on in the day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my original thoughts were like how you're talking about old posters. My Kiss Destroyer one, that never made it here. You know what I'm saying? that one just got worn out. And I said, I think it was Rock and Roll Over. I think it was when they had the four faces, like, looking up, and it was kind of like in the 3D. I think that was kind of I want to say it was Rock and Roll Over, that one.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to check these out.
Yeah, you know, Brian, quick question, though. So sure. Mike and I are tossing it back and forth, trying to figure out what it is that keeps us from going back to listening or keeping us from listening to new music. What keeps you from listening to new music? Is it just because you love the old stuff so much? What is it?
Because I was kind of talking to a friend of mine through an email. There's no one that can ever think about Jimmy Page, Alex Lifeson from Rush, a vocal a guy such as Ozzy, Robert Plant, someone as a drummer as Keith Moon, Bill Ward, things like that.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the things, and it seems like music nowadays, it's in, it's out, it's in, it's out, it's mm-hmm. in. You know, nobody can.
It's not timeless.
Their mind. Nobody can make up their mind, and I really don't listen to radio music at all. Well, as you can tell, I listen to GN almost 24/7.
Yeah,
and it's like when I do want to listen to something, it's you got a pretty good idea what I like to listen to, and I just go about doing my daily business or however, and it's on, you know. But I don't get, you know, say, okay, I got to go buy this DVD or that DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But right. I still have some vinyl. My Kiss Destroyer never made it, but I do have that still. I bought one back then. It was a Rush, All the World's a Stage.
Oh, come on. Yes, Brian.
I still got that one. Okay, that's, but I even got a better one. In Through the Outdoor from Zeppelin. Okay, still on vinyl. But I still got the brown paper bag. See? How they marketed it, when the Zeppelin marketed, they said, I don't know if you can find it on YouTube or anything like that, but I got it on actual VHS when they were on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't think of the lady's name on MTV where they're doing the interview with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. And he says, oh, we'll just put the album out in a brown paper bag. Mm-hmm. And that's how they marketed it back in 76, 77, something like that.
Oh, Brian, thank you very much. That was very insightful. I love hearing these stories. We only have a few more seconds of news. So thank you very much for listening to WG, my friend.
And by the way?
Yes.
This is the second time I'm online in 2 days with GN, because last night I won the Pizza on Patty's trivia question.
Brian, I remember talking to you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the baseball card. Yeah, I got all the junk in LaPorte, man.
All right. Well, thanks again, dude. Have a good rest of your week, and thanks for listening to WGN.
You know it. Thank you.
Take care, my friend. Ah, great times. Domati.
Good stuff.
I wanted to dive into a little bit of this research, but I think I had more fun talking about records and posters on the wall.
That's a fact. Before we close, yeah. I just got to shout out this album. This 773 texted, Diggable Planets changed her life, changed mine too. And Michael Jackson, New Edition, Babyface, Janet Jackson, Johnny Gill, Kelly, all of those posters. It just made me feel nostalgic. That was much more fun than statistics. I can't lie. Like I'm going to ride home and listen to this stuff. So thank you for letting me hang out with you. This is fun.
Domati, come back anytime. I love talking to you, man. Before you go, I want to know, what was that first record that your mom or dad put on that you're like, wow, this is my thing?
That first album was probably The Roots' Do You Want More? The second would have been Jay-Z's Reasonable Doubt.
Oh.
And we talked about this really quickly off air. The first video for the Everything Is Love project with Jay-Z and Beyonce, they bought out the Louvre, the museum, and shot the first video there. And even though we're not seeing this emphasis on album art and physical art, mm-hmm. I do see elements of art being elevated in the culture. And, you know, with artists like that doing that and super creative videos coming out, there is some hope for the future of music, Mike. It's going to be good.
There's hope. Hey, Domati, we're going to talk to Elton Jim in a second. Do you want to stick around?
Sure.
Okay, very cool. Let's go to news with Roger. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Michael Heidemann. I'm here with Domati Pongo. We're talking about music, all things music. What albums you're loving? What are your glory day memories? We had a few great calls, but now we're going to dive into something a little bit differently. The demise of Rolling Stone magazine. It's been around for so many years. It's touched so many lives. I know that I subscribed to it for many, many years. I remember it would come in the mail, and it was the first adult magazine that my parents let me have, and I was enthralled by the fact that they let me have that. It was like, no Playboy, but yes Rolling Stone, darn it. To talk about that and a little bit of some Elvis Costello news, we bring on the WGN Radio Man About Town, our good friend Elton Jim. Jim, what's going on, man?
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for staying up late and talking to us. How's life? How's your weekend going?
Well, I'm not staying up. I just woke up, but it's still the same thing. As far as you know, I've been up since, 3 in the afternoon, so it doesn't matter.
You know what, to be honest, I don't think you ever sleep. You just did a whole week of shows here over at WGN.
Yeah, that's why one reason why I'm probably still awake. I just finished filling in for Nick DiGiulio on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, so I'm getting used to talking, at 3 in the morning, so this actually wasn't that big of an inconvenience, and I'm always ready, willing, and able to talk music, so I appreciate you giving me a call.
Of course. Well, this kind of incited from your segment you did about Rolling Stone. Now, could you give us a little bit of insight? What were you discussing at Nick's Hours the other day? Because
a couple of days ago, I was talking about this because back in October, the announcement came from Jan Wenner, who founded Rolling Stone, that their magazine, that was founded in 1967, was up for sale. And it really shocked a lot of people because, as you said earlier, it really was one of the most important and certainly one of the best well-known magazines of the past 50 or so years. And it really made an impact at the time when it was put together and through at least its first almost 30 or 40 years, it certainly had a great reputation and a great impact. Over the last 20, I would say it's began to lose, at least from my standpoint, it's lost its way a little editorially because when it was founded in 1967, it was a voice for the counterculture. It was a voice for the emerging baby boomer generation. And there was a void there because, in those days, unlike today, young people and their needs were not really catered to. It was more of an adult world. But there was this burgeoning generation of young people who had the numbers, just like today's millennials, where they were going to be a force to be reckoned with. And, of course, in the midst of things like the Vietnam War, the rise of rock and roll, the new exploration of drugs, there was a big growing counterculture, and Rolling Stone, as I said, filled that need and spoke to that generation, and rock music was a part of growing up at that time, and so it really went hand in hand with not only the music, but also the cultural change, and of course, led by at that time the Beatles, and then in '67, of course, that's when Sgt. Pepper came out. So it really was a perfect storm for this magazine to come out, and as I said, it spoke to a generation that up to that point was not being catered to, but certainly was going to play a big role culturally in the country and in the world.
Yeah, it's so true, because journalism, that people don't understand, journalism kind of pushes the tide of where people think, how people think, and if you're doing it correctly with a group of young people focusing on music, but actually making things like progressive change and protesting for your rights, going to Vietnam, protesting Vietnam, cool, then you know what, you're doing a positive for your community, and you're doing positive for the culture. So it's kind of sad to see this going away. I mean, can you even think of another journalism source that is as powerful as Rolling Stone as it was in the 60s and 70s?
Well, no, I mean, like I said, you mentioned another one, which is in the same kind of predicament in terms of in 2018. You mentioned it, is Playboy magazine. And let's get aside the nude pictures, which certainly was a main, attraction of the magazine and always will be a part of its history. But at the same time, just like Rolling Stone, that magazine came out in the 50s, and it really, the nudity was, at least in theory, you can argue that, and people that were against the magazine certainly did, but Hugh Hefner's initial theme was the Playboy image. Mm-hmm. And and it was more about, and the magazine was more about sexual revolution in a very tight-knit and very conservative 1950s culture here in the country. So it once again was speaking to another voice of people that were at that time not just teenagers, but maybe in their 20s and 30s. Don't forget, this is post World War II, and this is the baby. This is the baby boomer generation that was being born. But there was a new sophistication at that time. There was a lot more. You know, all of a sudden, people were making more money. There was disposable income, and so the whole idea behind Playboy magazine was the Playboy philosophy, and it talked about other types of lifestyle things. You know, Playboy. Yes, it had. You know, naked pictures of women, but it also had things about vacations. It had stuff about sports. It had stuff about music. You know, the Playboy football pool or football poll, for many years, that was a leading sports kind of poll that was in that magazine. You know, who was going to win the Super Bowl? And even the college sports. Playboy had a yearly music poll. So very similar to Rolling Stone, Playboy spoke to another kind of audience that wasn't being, you know, addressed at the time. And once again, you know, people, you know, Hugh Hefner just passed away, a couple of years ago or so. And, you know, in terms of loosening up this society, it's hard for people today to understand how tight-knit our country was in terms of morality, and how religion was so much stronger, and you know, in terms of the way you talked and what you did and how you thought. So I would equate actually Playboy magazine to your question with Rolling Stone as a magazine that that did play a role in changing the culture speaking to an audience that was there but wasn't being catered to.
Yeah, another big big journalism outlet for a seminal time in our history. Don Mattea here, Elton. It makes me think, aside from what the magazine strayed away from in terms of their approach to their editorial style, what does the downfall of Rolling Stone magazine say about the magazine industry in general, or the print industry? We see the same thing happening with newspapers across the country, and publications all across the board have downsized, gone from weekly or monthly publications to quarterly. So what can we learn from this?
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, the entire media, and especially publishing, has been just decimated, and it's still newspapers and magazines are still trying to figure out a role and a place in an internet world where, as soon as ink hits paper, that issue of the newspaper or that issue of a magazine is pretty much already outdated. The minute at the printing press, a newspaper or a magazine is already behind the times because of a 24-hour, and not even, you know, thanks to the internet, it's not just a 24-hour news cycle, it's a second-by-second news cycle. So that's where newspapers and magazines are still struggling to find their place, because how do you compete? I mean, right now you can go, and you do news, you can go online and find something new about something that just happened somewhere in the world. The world before, and once again, for younger people, it might be harder for you guys to grasp it, but we lived in a society where ironically, after the 10 o'clock news, people really were not informed again until they got their newspaper at 6 in the morning. You know, there was like an 8-hour gap where people were not informed. There were no 24-hour news, you know, networks on television. You went to, you saw the 10 o'clock news at night, and then you woke up, you know, at 6 in the morning, and your newspaper was waiting there, and then you learned what just happened overnight. And that's the way we accepted it, because that was the only kind of delivery system that existed for us. So, yeah, I mean, to your question about what does it mean, it to me it means that I think, as I said, and I've been a subscriber, Michael, you were saying you were a subscriber, I've been a subscriber to Rolling Stone for probably more than 30 years. In fact, about 25 years ago, when the magazine industry was also going through another doldrum with the economy, because of my long time subscribing, I was offered a lifetime subscription for $30.
Yeah.
And so how do I turn that down?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've received Rolling Stone now probably for the last 20 years, you know, based on that $130 subscription I paid 30 years ago. And I will tell you, as much as I still read the magazine, because it does keep me up on you know, the news and things, I also feel like editorially Rolling Stone has kind of lost its way, because when it was founded, as I said, it was a voice from the counterculture. And then in the 60s and then in the 70s and even in the 80s, Rolling Stone and the baby boomers were no longer the counterculture. They were the establishment. And so once you become the establishment, it's hard to keep that rebel attitude.
I want to get into what that means for them becoming the establishment and what did that look like in just a minute. But I thought about the last time I was on Rolling Stone. I was really thinking about the last time I was on Rolling Stone was this morning, because their website released a Drake freestyle. And I look and I know they get ad revenue from the hits that they get online. But in, like you said, because the news cycle moves so quickly, especially even in music news, no matter what it is, politics, culture, music news, movie news, it all moves so quickly. And they have to be online in order to keep up. But
yeah, and that's the thing. I ultimately think that the company that so to fast forward, they announced that they were being sold in October, and then in late December they announced that they were bought by a company called Penske Media Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And this company is not all that well known, but it does have, to your point, it does have a very strong online presence with the other publications and magazines that it owns. So I think, as this goes on, I would not be surprised if Rolling Stone, because I'm a subscriber, I get push emails every day, and sometimes two or three times a day from Rolling Stone, and they have completely revamped their, since the new owners have taken over, they have revamped the website, and they now push more stories of breaking, you know, kind of qualities to go to that website. I wouldn't be surprised if Rolling Stone in about 2 or 3 years, and maybe sooner, becomes an all online magazine. I just received the first issue under the new ownership, and I was shocked to see the last several years Rolling Stone became a mere shadow of itself physically. It had only 62 pages. It was a normal-sized magazine. Rolling Stone was always an oversized magazine. It always had, you know, over 100 and some pages. And I got this new one, and it was very similar in that it was oversized. It had 138 pages. On the cover is Cardi B and Offset. Offset is kissing Cardi B's pregnant stomach, mm-hmm. naked stomach. She's half nude with her pregnant body and everything. So it's a very provocative cover. And I don't know, maybe the new company is trying to at least show their support for the magazine by putting out this bigger, thicker, glossier. The layout is different. This cover with Cardi B, kind of controversial or at least a little provocative. But at the same time, I wonder in the long term if ultimately the print version may go by the wayside, because this magazine itself, and I'm holding it in my hands right now, this thing is heavy. This thing cost a heck of a lot of money, not only to produce, but to mail.
Yeah,
right.
And in today's world, I mean, once again, as I said, this is an interesting magazine, but everything in there is already dated. Even though it's a new magazine, it's already dated because, as I said, once the ink hits the page in today's world, news is already changing. And so, I think what magazines and newspapers have to do to move forward is they have to use their resources to do things that do not have breaking news types of qualities. Like, for instance, this is a big feature profile, not only about Cardi B, but a huge rambling, almost in-depth feature about Johnny Depp. And so that's something that you might want to read in Rolling Stone, because it's not necessarily breaking news, but it is an interesting read, and that's what you're seeing even with the Chicago Tribune and other newspapers. They're trying to make their mark not by the daily news and breaking news of the moment, but through investigative reports that the Internet doesn't really cater to, longer investigative stories that take some legwork to do. The Internet is more about instant and what's breaking now. So maybe that's the niche that magazines and newspapers can have in the long run, is using their resources to fill that niche of more in-depth stories. Yes. About different causes or different issues that the Internet seems more likely not to worry about, because they're now the arbiters of the instant news.
I hear, Jim, you are a wealth of knowledge. We'll see where the state of journalism takes it. I think Rolling Stone is still doing a great job with those long form articles, and who knows, we'll see where they go in the next few years. I wish all the best for Rolling Stone. Jim,
well, yeah, so do I. Believe me, I grew up with this magazine, so I'm not hoping that it goes away, but I'm just looking at the realities of this and saying, it's tough for this kind of a magazine. And as I said about it's losing its way, I think what happened with Rolling Stone in the last couple of years is that it just it didn't know what it wanted to be. Did it want to be a culture magazine?
Yeah,
did it want to be a music magazine? Did it want to be a celebrity magazine? It used to have 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 pages of music reviews. Now it has 1 page and maybe 3 album reviews.
it's
a music magazine per se.
It wouldn't matter for you because you already have the lifetime subscription. So you're set.
It doesn't matter. Exactly. But I'm talking about, before, if you got a 4, they used to use a 5-star rating instead of 4, Rolling Stone, your story do and still does. But, I mean, it was a big, when I was growing up, I mean, you picked up Rolling Stone to read the reviews as to which albums to buy.
Yeah.
It was your source and your guide. And the Rolling Stone review could either make or break an act or an album. And that's just not the case anymore.
Jim, I love talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much for staying up late with us tonight.